Touring the Talmud, Sanhedrin 111 to 113, and Makot 2 to 5. Birds of a feather. The larger the group, the more of your beauty as an individual you have to surrender for the sake of group thought. And when you suspend your individual beauty, you also give up a lot of your humanity. You'll do things in the name of a group that you would never do on your own. Injuring, hurting, killing, drinking are all part of it. Because you've lost your identity. Because you now owe your allegiance to this thing that's bigger than you are and that controls you. George Carlin. We are a social species. Our social dynamics greatly determine how we think and act, and we are highly susceptible to the influences of those with whom we live and interact. There are both positive and negative aspects to the group dynamic. Great acts can be accomplished because of the power and strength of multitudes working in tandem with each other. Yet, because of the power that the group dynamic has on the individual's thoughts and actions, we must be vigilant and aware of its impact upon us. There are different modes of societal impact on our lives. There's peer pressure, when we are influenced by our friends and contemporaries to do or say things we might not if left to our own judgment. There's groupthink, in which group pressures lead to poor reality testing and moral judgment, and benefits of the group are considered over truth and ethics. There's also the herd or mob mentality, in which meta-thought emerges from the interactions of the group as the mass of people takes on a mind of its own. As individuals within a group, we take on the characteristic of both the people who make up the group, their style, language, psychology, and the dynamics that occur as a result of being within a group. People tend to relax control over their individual inhibitions as their mentality becomes that of the group. A major factor that plays out in crowd behavior is the anonymity that we take on by becoming a mere face in the crowd, by losing ourselves to the group. If we can use our knowledge of the hypnotic pull of the crowd mentality towards irrational and emotionally charged behavior and rise above its influence, there's possibility that we can come back to the center of our own being so that we might judge what is best for us to do as individuals. While in certain situations we might be in a position to influence an unethical or immoral group of people to become rehabilitated, it is a dangerous and risky task. One must be prepared to deal with all the steady coercion that a group of people naturally exert on its members without losing oneself to them. Torah cautions us from losing our judgment in groupthink circumstances and from relinquishing our self-discipline in herd mentalities where we could be driven to act in immoral and unethical ways. We are all ultimately responsible for our own actions. Velo tehe acharei rabim lera'ot. You are not to go after the majority to do evil, says in Exodus. Torah does not absolve us of our individual responsibilities simply because we might be caught in such predicaments. Therefore, we must halachically take preventative measures so that we do not find ourselves in the wrong groups. The resistance, once we are in, is practically insurmountable. As it says in Tehillim, happy is the man who has not joined the company of the insolent. Perkei Avot, Yossi ben Ya'ezer says, may your house be a meeting house for sages. Nitai of Arbel says, distance yourself from a bad neighbor. Do not befriend an evildoer. And Harambam writes, it is natural for a man's character and actions to be influenced by his friends and associates and for him to follow the local norms of behavior. Therefore, he should associate with the righteous and be constantly in the company of the wise so as to learn from their deeds. Conversely, he should keep away from the wicked who walk in darkness so as not to learn from their deeds. If in the place he lives they are wicked and sinful and do not allow him to reside there unless he mingle with them and follow their evil behavior, he should go out to caves, thickets, and deserts rather than follow the paths of delinquents. As Jeremiah states, who will give me a lodging place for wayfarers in the desert? Allowing ourselves to get sucked into the momentum of groupthink and herd mentalities is in and of itself sinful. When we do, we are subject to the fate of the group as we become indistinguishable from it. Humans flock, just like sheep and birds. It is a special kind of group phenomenon that occurs when a majority of people follow a small number of those who seem to know what they are doing. Rather than attempt to judge for ourselves and work to discover answers, we tend to take the path of least resistance and follow those who seem to have knowledge and competence, even if they do not. A remarkable study conducted by Leeds University examined how we instinctively follow others. Professor Krauss, with PhD student John Dyer, conducted a series of experiments where groups of people were asked to walk randomly around a large hall. Within the group, a select few received more detailed information about where to walk. Participants were not allowed to communicate with one another, but had to stay within arm's length of another person. The findings show that in all cases, the informed individuals were followed by others in the crowd, forming a self-organizing, snake-like structure. What's interesting about this research is that our participants ended up making a consensus decision despite the fact that they weren't allowed to talk or gesture to one another. In most cases, the participants didn't realize they were being led by others. They found that 95% of the crowd will follow 5% that exhibits any greater knowledge. When this occurs, we tend to lose our individuality, personal judgment, and self-awareness, and we become a mindless crowd rather than conscious individuals. Sanhedrin's closing issue highlights this element of human sociology in quite a serious way. It deals with what is called an ir hanidahat, literally a city seduced or led astray. It deals with a situation where two or more people influence a large portion of a city's population to worship foreign gods. It is a unique legal case in Torah in which the city is considered as a single entity, and the inhabitants and their property are not considered as individuals, but as members of an idol-worshipping collective. As the Rambam writes, the inhabitants of the city that has been led astray to foreign worship are executed by decapitation if they worshipped a false deity or accepted it as a god. A city is not condemned as such a city until two or more individuals attempt to lead its inhabitants astray. As it states in Deuteronomy, unfaithful people have emerged. Those led astray must be the majority of the city's inhabitants. They must number from at least 100 to the majority of the tribe. If it is a minority, there's not enough critical mass to establish a mob. Another aspect of this phenomenon of social compliance is carried over from the end of Sanhedrin and discussed in the first chapter of Makot. It deals with the case of Edim Zomimin, witnesses that plot to convict a defendant falsely. Torah requires that if they are found to be lying before the defendant is wrongly convicted, we do to them what they had hoped would happen to the defendant. And if the witness is a false witness and has testified falsely against his brother, you shall do unto him as he conspired to do to his brother. So shall you remove the evil from your midst, and those that remain shall hear and fear, and shall henceforth commit no more such evil in your midst, and your eyes shall not pity. Life for a life, eye for an eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot. Devarim 19:16. In order for testimony to be considered valid in a Jewish court of law, there must be a minimum of two witnesses. However, the Torah writes that the issue must be substantiated by two or three witnesses. The Talmud asks, if two are acceptable, why mention three? Rabbi Akiva takes this opportunity to point out in the Mishnah that although the testimony is sufficient with two, when there are three or more witnesses, the additional people are considered like full-fledged witnesses, even though the judgment would be upheld with the first two alone. This teaches us that when we are part of a group, we cannot simply hide our individual presence in it. Each person stands as a member of the group and is judged as part of it. There is an initial choice. The choice to be part of the group is what counts. When we associate ourselves with any group, good or bad, we bear the responsibility of being part of it. This is much because we cannot be part of a group and not be influenced by it. We must expect the influence and consider it an utter reality when we make the choice to join. For this reason, we must carefully take into account with whom we will interact when we choose a university, a place of work, a neighborhood, a city, and even a country in which to live. We must consider our group of friends and choose each one, knowing that those with whom we surround ourselves will have profound influence on our thinking, actions, and development as a person. In doing so, we can create meaningful and effective cohorts. We can create great change for the better with strength in numbers, and we can grow in our own virtue by being connected to and learning from the virtue of others. Shabbat Shalom.